2 Corinthians chapter 8, the topic this morning is giving. So you picked the right Sunday to come to church. It's about, in context, taking up a collection for the needy saints that are in Jerusalem. Paul was raising money to help the Christians in Jerusalem who were very poor. He had previously mentioned this effort to the Corinthians at the end of 1 Corinthians in chapter 16. He starts chapter 8 by using the generosity of the churches in Macedonia as an example. Then he encourages the Corinthians to follow suit in their previous commitment to help the struggling believers in Jerusalem. And then as we get into the chapter, Paul shows Jesus as the ultimate example of preferring others above his own interests. So let's go ahead and jump right in. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning from verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So he speaks about the grace of God that was bestowed upon these churches in Macedonia and their desire to minister to the saints, to serve the poor and the needy that were back in Jerusalem. And so remember again that Paul is up in Macedonia at this time at the writing of 2 Corinthians. This is a picture of his third missionary journey. Paul had founded the church in Corinth on a second missionary journey. He spent a year and a half there, preaching the gospel, people getting saved, helping them to get grounded in the word. And then when he went on his third missionary journey, he came to Ephesus and he spent 3 years in Ephesus. And it was from Ephesus that he wrote 1 Corinthians, which is the book we studied previously. And then on his way back to Corinth again to visit them, he came to Philippi. And he wrote 2 Corinthians. Traditionally, that's where it's believed that 2 Corinthians was written. So notice he's up in Macedonia. And as he speaks about the churches that are in Macedonia, that they're pulling together an offering, he's talking about the church in Philippi. He's talking about the one in Thessalonica. He's talking about the one in Berea, that they're pulling together their resources to be able to help out, again, with this collection that's ultimately going to make its way back to Jerusalem because the saints were struggling back in Jerusalem financially. And so they're pulling their resources together to help them out. And notice that it refers, and it throughout this chapter, the giving aspect is referred to as the grace of God being bestowed, the favor of God being bestowed upon the churches to then extend favor themselves in gifting these ones that are in need. Notice in verse 2, though, it says of those churches in Macedonia that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy. Well, that seems kind of conflicting right there, doesn't it? Great trial of affliction, but an abundance of joy. Somebody tell me how you can have an abundance of joy when you're going through a great trial of affliction. The reality is you've got a deep-seated joy inside of you, don't you? And nobody can rob you of that, no matter what you're going through. Okay, the joy of the Lord is our... it's our strength. He's the one that's going to be able to see us through the most difficult times. And he does. You're right. He does work a work in our lives. We come out the end of those trials and we realize the good that God has done through the midst of them. And so these guys are no different. And you think about the affliction. We just look back at the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 16, Paul came to Philippi. He was preaching the gospel. He healed that slave girl. She was a fortune teller. And because the masters of the slave girl were so upset because she'd been healed, they beat up Paul. And he was thrown into the inner prison with Silas. And so that's what was going on in Philippi. So they left Philippi. Excuse me. They came to Thessalonica. He preached the gospel in Thessalonica, but then in the synagogue, the Jewish people who didn't want to hear from him, they persecuted him to the point that he went to Berea. And then when he's in Berea preaching the gospel, those in Thessalonica who were after him came over to Berea and persecuted him there, so that he had to go down to Athens. So you can imagine what was going on then with the churches after Paul had left. There would have been a tremendous amount, I think, of persecution. So when it speaks of their great trial of affliction, we get a little bit of an idea of what life was like. But yet, in all of that, they had this joy that was deep-seated. Not only did they have their trials, verse 2, but they also were in deep poverty. In other words, they didn't have a lot to work with, but notice it led to the riches of their liberality. Even though they didn't have much, even though they were persecuted, they were poor, they had joy, and they were generous. And not only that, but as he goes on to say in verse 3, I bear witness that according to their ability, notice, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing. And so beyond really what they probably could naturally afford, they were sacrificially giving to help out the believers back in Jerusalem. Notice verse 4, imploring us, that means begging us with much urgency that we would receive the gift. Isn't that how we all give? You know, please take my money here. I want you to take it and help these people out. You know, we're going to talk about the nature of giving next week because chapters 8 and 9 kind of go together. They talk about this gift that's being brought together. And also, it gives us some direction under the new covenant as compared to the old covenant on the area of giving in our hearts as we are to be good stewards before the Lord and what he's entrusted to us. And so again, verse 4, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. Notice verse 5. And not only that, and not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord. And that's really the key thing. It's not just giving money, but it's giving yourself. You know, it's easy to throw 20 bucks at a homeless person on the side of the street. It's a whole nother thing to get out and invest in their lives and help them get on their feet again and get going, isn't it? And so that's the idea here. They gave of themselves first, and then, of course, their resources. In Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We're given a picture of the old covenant sacrificial system where the animals would be offered upon the altar. And specifically, the burnt offering would be the offering that would be wholly consumed upon the altar. It wouldn't be like some of the other offerings where some of it was given to the priest for them to eat and some to the worshiper for them to eat. Here with the burnt offering, it was to be wholly consumed upon the altar, all of it given up to the Lord, if you will. And that's the idea here, is that the entirety of your being be given over to the Lord. And notice, not a dead sacrifice, but a living sacrifice. And I think that's what it speaks of. Give yourself entirely over to the Lord, what he wants to do in your life. And as it says in Romans 12, 2, do not be conformed to this world. This world wants to squeeze all of us into its mold, into the moral standards that it has, which, by the way, 1 John 5:19 tells us are under the influence of the wicked one. And so rather than letting the world squeeze us into its way of thinking, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The word transformed, we get our word metamorphosis from that. And the idea with the verb tense is a continual transformation. It's like that sanctification process that's taking place in our lives, that continual work that's transforming us by renewing our mind. And I get the picture of washing our minds with the Word of God, as we were looking at last week, where he mentioned us cleansing ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. So it's allowing the Lord to do that continual work in our lives, that we would be transformed, not conformed, but transformed. And thus then the giving of ourselves over to whatever the Lord wants to do. And that's really what you see the picture of these churches that were in Macedonia, as they were giving themselves over to the Lord and just joyously giving to the need at hand. And so after speaking of the Macedonian believers' generosity, he encourages the Corinthians to follow suit. We look at verse 6. So we urge Titus that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. Notice how he refers to it as grace. But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. I speak not by commandment, but I'm testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. Paul mentions the qualities that the Corinthians had. And you know, when we went through 1 Corinthians, again, like I've mentioned a number of times, it was largely a corrective letter, largely an instructive letter. But the reality is these guys were some blessed people. And they did have a lot of giftings among themselves. And it speaks of their faith, their trust in the Lord, their speech, their utterance, and their knowledge, and their diligence, and their love. All of this was given to them by the grace of God. And now it was time to abound in this other aspect, and that would be their generosity. Titus had begun the work, and so he was to go back and he was to complete the work as they gathered their offering together. He mentions in verse 8, I speak not by commandment. And that's the idea here is, it's not that you have to give. It's rather you have the opportunity where you can give. You can invest in this. David Guzik said, Paul knew that giving from commandment isn't giving at all. We call that kind of giving taxation. So to show the sincerity of their love, their actions would be engaged. As he said, they're testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. He would compare the Corinthians to the Macedonians, and the sincerity of their love was seen in their actions and what they did. And you know, anybody can say they believe, right? But really, it's what we do with our lives that show that we're believers. And that generosity, that aspect, as he puts here, of grace, like God extends his grace to us, and he wants us to extend grace to others. He's given us his salvation freely, and he wants us, as we have freely received, he wants us to freely give. And so in this case, it's the financial need that they had in Jerusalem. But as we looked at Romans chapter 12, it's really giving of ourselves, our beings to him. You know, when you talk about giving under the New Testament, and we'll talk more about this next week, it's not really so much we're going to slice off a percentage and that's God and the rest is mine. The reality is all of it's God's. And he's allowed us to be stewards over what he's given to us. That's really cool. And that's really the desire of my heart is to come to the end and have been a good steward over what he entrusted to me. It's so easy, isn't it, to hoard things. And you know, don't get me wrong. I know we need to provide for our futures. That's being a good steward as well. But it is easy to hoard, isn't it? And especially in trying times where the economy is uncertain, you're like, I can't let go of this. But the reality is God is able to take care of us all the way through. And he wants us to have that generous spirit like he has towards us. And so that's really kind of what resonates with me through this. James chapter 2, verses 15 through 17 says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Faith without works, faith without actions backing it up is a dead faith. And so what testifies to whether we truly are trusting Jesus as our Savior is if there's actions in our life. And I'm not just talking about financial stuff, the entirety of our life. Are we really trusting him as our Savior? Do we really live like that? It's going to be seen through the way we live and the interaction that we have, of course, with those around us. And so now he moves from that and talking about the Macedonians and of course, looking at the exhortation to the Corinthians. He says in verse 9, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you, through his poverty, might become rich. It's kind of a neat way to put it, isn't it? Though he was rich, he became poor. The eternal Son of God, enjoying the glories of heaven, the angelic host worshiping him, he set that all aside, the riches of glory, and he came down to this earth. Not born in a palace, the eternal Son of God, but born in a stable and laid in a manger and crucified upon a cross. He became poor for the sake of you and me. He came down to this earth. He gave up his life so that we could become rich, rich with salvation, rich with an abundant life here and now. One of the passages that I think addresses this the best is Philippians chapter 2. And in Philippians chapter 2, Paul is encouraging those in Philippi to have that kind of heart where they would care for one another and they wouldn't look out just for their own interests, but the interests of others. And then he sets Jesus as the example to follow. He said in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8, "Let this mind, the same attitude, be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God." Scholars refer to this section as the great kenosis passage, kenosis by one of the Greek words that we're going to look at in just a moment. But he says, who being in the form of God, the word form speaks of his nature. So as far as my nature goes, I'm human by nature. As far as Jesus' nature goes, he's divine by nature. So who being in very nature God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. That's the Greek kenosis right there. Some translations have, he emptied himself. And of course, the question is, what did he empty himself of? He didn't empty himself of his deity because that's who he is by nature, right? I mean, that's who he is. So I think, and many scholars think, he laid aside that outward manifestation of glory and the glories of heaven. He was rich, he laid that aside, and he became poor. He came to this earth and he became a man. So you have Jesus who is fully God, who in very nature is God, fully God and also fully man. And again, he did it for you and me. He did it for the purpose of laying his life down so that we can become rich, so that we can be forgiven and have salvation. But made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. The cross was one of the cruelest forms of punishment, of execution in that day. In fact, a Roman citizen could not be crucified. That's why you see the Apostle Paul, he was beheaded in Rome because he was a Roman citizen. But Peter, on the other hand, he was crucified because he wasn't a Roman citizen. And they looked at it as too severe, too cruel for any Roman citizen to go through. And this is the death that Jesus went through. And again, remember, he did it for our sakes. He came down here and he gave himself as a sacrifice for you and me so that we can be forgiven of our sin when we put our trust in him. Then their sins forgiven, and then we can come into God's presence. We can go to heaven because of what Jesus has done. One of the passages in Matthew, Jesus said, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." He came to this earth not to build a life here. He came to this earth to accomplish a mission because he loves us so much. Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates his love for us, and that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. If you've ever wondered or questioned whether God really loves you, just look to the cross. It testifies of his love for each one of us. And he did it for our sakes, that we might become rich. Let's look at James again, James 2:5. "Listen, my beloved brethren, has God not chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith?" And notice, "heirs of the kingdom, which he promised to those who love him, rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom." Revelation 21:7, "He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." You give your life to Jesus, and what do you get? Well, first of all, you get abundant life. John 10:10, Jesus said, "The thief comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy, but I've come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly." The devil just wants to rip us off, doesn't he? He just deceives the unbelieving mind. And we think, if I become a Christian, then my life's going to be boring. But the reality is we become a Christian and we find out what life really is, an abundant life, a life that's filled with meaning and purpose. That's here and now. But then there's also the promise of we're going to go into his presence when we pass from this life. And for eternity, we'll be with him. Bible Knowledge Commentary says he became what they were, poor, so that they could become what he was and is, rich. Therefore, was a material offering really too much to ask? So in light of the Macedonians and Jesus' example, Paul urges the Corinthians to be generous. Let's take it back up from verse 10. And in this I give advice. It is to your advantage not only to be doing what you began and were desiring to do a year ago, but now you also must complete the doing of it. That is, there was a readiness to desire it, so there also may be a completion out of what you have. For if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but by an equality that now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also may supply your lack, that there may be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. He gives his advice in verse 10, it's to your advantage. You know, Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. Isn't that so true? You go, you know, I'm going to go on a mission trip, and I'm going to go, and I'm really going to bless. Who's the one that ends up getting blessed? You end up getting blessed, don't you? It's more blessed when you're giving out than when you're receiving. And he mentions here at the end of verse 10, do what you began and were desiring to do a year ago. This is probably just referring back to the collection that Paul had instructed to be taken up, again, for the churches that were in Jerusalem. If you want to turn over to the end of 1 Corinthians, he mentions this in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. And again, remember, 1 Corinthians had been written from Ephesus, so this was, you know, probably a year earlier or so. He says in 1 Corinthians 16:1, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. But if it is fitting that I go also, they will go with me. So Paul writing some time ahead, saying, you know, on the first of the week, which this is one of the, I think, three passages we have in the New Testament that speak of the church meeting on the first day of the week, worship being on Sunday, as opposed to what the Jews did under the Old Covenant, meeting on the Sabbath day, which would be Saturday. On the first day of the week, let each one lay aside. But notice he says, I don't want you to take up an offering when I come. No passing the plate when Paul gets here. It's like, I want all of that done before I come. And then those that you approve, that have your letter of recommendation, can go with me to bear that gift to Jerusalem, keep bringing some accountability into all of this. And so going back to 2 Corinthians chapter 8 again, referring again to what they began to do a year ago, it's like, now is time to complete it. Again, verse 11, but now you also must complete the doing of it. That is, there was a readiness to desire it, so there also may be a completion out of what you have. Notice verse 12, for if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. And I think the idea here is it's not really so much about how much you're giving. Okay, it's just the fact that you've got the heart to give. And it reminds me of the widow who gave the two mites. And Jesus spoke about that in the first three Gospels. Luke 21 is the one I have written here. Jesus and his disciples were in the temple area. And Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. One of the commentaries I read about how much a mite was worth was 1/8 of a penny. She wasn't giving very much, was she? But notice how Jesus evaluated it in Luke 21, verses 3 and 4. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, for all these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. She didn't have much, but she gave more than the rest because it was a sacrifice. You know, we had one guy in the church years ago who was very well off, and he was a strong, wonderful believer and very supportive of the ministry. And we, a couple of guys were standing around, and he was saying, you know, they say give till it hurts. You know, I could give $1 million and it wouldn't hurt. Kind of bemoaning that. And I told him, just keep giving then. You know, it was a joke. He knew it was a joke. You get the idea. But it's kind of in contrast right here, is Paul is saying it's not like you have to be depleted so that they can be doing good. Did you notice that? I think both are true. I don't mean to be speaking and contradictory here, but as he says in verse 13, for I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened. In other words, I'm not saying let's drain all your money so that the Jerusalem church can have everything, but rather, verse 14, by inequality. That now at this time, your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also so may supply your lack. I think the idea is you're doing good now, you can help them out. It might come the day when the tables are turned and you're going to need help, and they can turn around and they can help you out so that we can take care of one another is the idea, an equality. And then in verse 15, he quotes Exodus 16, as it is written, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. This was the manna provision when Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt. I mean, how are you going to feed all these people? And so God rained bread from heaven. And what would happen is they would get up in the morning and there would be something like a dew over the face of the earth. And they would go out and collect it. And I guess it would be somewhat like flour. They would gather it together. They would bake it. And there would be enough that they could eat. And God would provide that for them each day. And so each person, if you had a family of 10, then you would go out and you would get an omer for each person, like a jar for each person. 10 overs for that family. If you only had two in your family, then you just would go out and you'd get two jars, let's say. And the idea was God was taking care of everybody. No, nobody was lacking in the congregation there of Israel. And what was interesting, I think in all of this, God was really teaching them how to depend on him on a daily basis, because they couldn't hoard, could they? You remember what would happen if they would hoard the manna? It would breed worms. Yeah, it wouldn't last. So they could only take what they needed for the day. And again, teaching them that daily dependence. But all of this is supernatural, isn't it? God is supernaturally raining bread from heaven, and as well as the breeding of the worms. Because on Friday, what would they do? They would gather twice as much, because the next day was the Sabbath, and they weren't to go out and work on that day. It was a day of rest. So when they gathered twice as much on Friday, it didn't breed worms. Pretty cool, isn't it? I think this transfers over the idea of depending upon God into Jesus teaching his disciples how to pray. Give us this day our daily bread, so that we would come to him on a daily basis to show our need of him and to have him lead us and to guide us. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Rather, give me the food that is my portion so that I would be dependent upon you and follow after you. And so here the idea, as God would provide for the children of Israel, there was no lack. Everybody had what they needed. Now it's like, let God provide for the church in Jerusalem through your generosity, I think is the idea that he's bringing here. Verse 16, but thanks be to God, who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. I think this gives us a glimpse into the heart of Titus. We just see what kind of person he is by Paul's testimony of him. When he says, thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care. We see that Titus had a care for them like God would, like Paul would. And Paul said much the same thing of Timothy in Philippians chapter 2, where Paul said, I have no one like-minded but Timothy who will sincerely care for your estate. So it's kind of cool because you have these people in Scripture that you get a little bit more insight on what kind of people they were. In this case, Titus, just being a true man of God. Verse 18, and we have sent with him, Titus that is, going back to Corinth, we have sent with him the brother, whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not only that, but who is also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself and to show your ready mind, avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift, which is administered by us, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. So we have Titus that's going, we have this brother that's mentioned, unnamed brother that's going as well. And this just speaks so much of accountability here. They have the responsibility as they take this gift and ultimately bring it to Jerusalem to administer it. I mean, when you think about it, they've taken all these people's, sacrificial giving, and they're going to Jerusalem, and they're not just going to take it and dump it somewhere. They're going to have the responsibility to administer that. And they're going to have the responsibility that when they go and take it, that they're not going to take some of it themselves. And so this is why they had other people going along. It just spoke of doing it the right way. So before the Lord that we would be right, and before man that we would be right as well. In the NIV, verse 20 reads, we want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. They wanted to be good stewards of what God had given them. And I think that says a lot. And I think, again, we can bring it down to every one of us. We've been entrusted with the things we have. Are we going to be good stewards before the Lord as we live for him and get to the end and have been shown a good steward? In verse 22, and we have sent with them, plural, our brother. So we have another brother that's mentioned, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence which we have in you. If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers, apostello in the Greek, apostle. They are our messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. Therefore, show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. So he mentions another here, a brother here. Paul had spoken highly of them, as he does, and their diligence. And it's just giving us kind of a nuts and bolts picture of what's going to take place in taking this offering over to Jerusalem. I wanted to piece in one other passage as we're looking at this, because it's kind of neat. You know that Paul is en route in the book of Acts. We see here in 2 Corinthians what he is communicating as he's en route to Corinth. And also when he gets to Corinth, he writes Romans. So I'm going to bring us to the book of Romans to see what else he has to say, still again coming in the same window of this collection. So in Romans chapter 15, verses 25 and 26, while he now has made it to Corinth, and he's writing this letter to the Romans, he says, but now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, for it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. So I just think it's kind of cool how we're getting these different bits of information concerning the same event that is taking place. So he mentions the contributions from the believers in Macedonia, which is at the top left of the screen, Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, and also in Achaia, which is the one's northern Greece, the other would be southern Greece, which would be Corinth and Athens, this contribution that had been taken up and then ultimately will make its way back to Jerusalem to assist them. So Titus, the brother from verse 18, the other brother from verse 22, the messengers, who are these people? We're not told. But when we look at Acts chapter 20 and we see them now en route going back up into Macedonia, heading off to Jerusalem, it says in Acts 20 verse 4, and Sopater of Berea, which is up in Macedonia, accompanied him to Asia. Also Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, which is over in Galatia, and Timothy and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. So good chance that, you know, it's some of these guys that are the brothers that are going with Titus. Interestingly enough, Titus isn't mentioned in the book of Acts, but you can see how he's so intricately involved in what's going on during this journey for whatever reason. So as he closes it out here, he's saying, show to them the proof of your love. And I think that's what it comes down to us right here, being an example of what God has done in our lives. They're going to know we're Christians by our love for one another. They're going to know we're Christians by the way we work with the resources that God has entrusted to us. It's a way that we can shine. And so next week as we come together, we'll talk more about the nature of what it looks like to be giving under the new covenant as opposed to the law that was set forth under the old covenant. And we'll piece those two together and see what we have, okay?